Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. In this episode, I want to give you an update on the situation in Turkey. If you've been following the channel, you'll know that I recently posted a video talking about the two enormous earthquakes that hit the country at the start of February. And at the latest count, over 47,000 people have died in Turkey and Syria as a result of those earthquakes. And unfortunately, whilst Turkey is still counting the cost of the original earthquakes, two additional earthquakes have struck exactly 2 weeks later. So in today's video, I'll give you some more details on those earthquakes. We'll have a look at why the original earthquakes were so devastating. We'll look at the sheer size of the cracks that have opened up in the land in Turkey. We'll then talk about the investigation that's now going on within Turkey about why a lot of the buildings that were constructed were not compliant with the new legislation that was brought in, which required all developers to incorporate safety features to prevent these buildings from collapsing in the event of an earthquake. We'll have a look at the estimated cost of the damage so far and what the impact of these earthquakes is likely to be on Turkey's GDP. I'll give you an update on the situation with regards to the NATO application from Finland and Sweden. Antony Blinken has actually made a visit to Turkey to try to persuade them to accelerate that process. We'll then touch upon what's happening with regards to the economic indicators. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary. So what I think is likely to happen in Turkey over the course of the next 3 to 6 months and what the implications will be for the Turkish economy and the global economy as a whole. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters, so if you don't have time to watch everything, you can pick and choose what you'd like to see. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube, super thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon. And as always, thank you so much to everyone that has supported the channel. Really appreciate it. Exactly 2 weeks after the two devastating earthquakes that struck Turkey on the 6th of February, two additional earthquakes measuring 6.4 and 5.8 on the Richter scale have hit Turkey's southern province of Hatay. The latest quakes, which are less powerful than the previous 7.8 and 7.5 magnitude quakes, threaten more devastation in a region where many people have fled their destroyed homes for the safety of other towns and villages outside the quake zone. And this map shows the location of all four quakes. Turkey's Disaster and Emergency Management Authority said there had been 90 aftershocks following the latest quakes, and 6,000 tents have been sent to the area overnight for residents. At the time of making this video, it's been reported that 6 people were killed in the latest quakes, 294 people injured, with 18 seriously hurt. However, it's very likely that these figures will rise. Now, these latest deaths are on top of the 41,156 confirmed deaths in Turkey as a result of the original two quakes. However, that figure is expected to climb further, with 385,000 apartments known to have been destroyed or seriously damaged, and many people are still missing. Now, in terms of why the original earthquakes were so devastating, this map shows the size of the rupture line that was created when the earthquake took place. And it's been reported that the land either side of this rupture line moved by up to 20 feet in opposite directions. Now, I wanted to give you an illustration of the reality of this. And the white line on this aerial shot shows the fissure line, so that's where the crack appeared. And you can see the two arrows which depict the movement in the land in opposite directions. And if I scroll up through this, you'll be able to see the actual movement in the land because we've got a before and after shot here. So as I scroll up, you can see the situation after, and then if I carry on, it's before. So if I just roll backwards and forwards on that, you can see that there's actual movement in the land, which is just incredible when you look at it from this perspective. And one of the reasons why this earthquake was so devastating was the sheer size of it. And to put that into perspective, I've got some relative maps here. Now, this map of Turkey shows the two fault lines which are depicted in orange. And you can see that the 7.8 magnitude fault line was the largest. So to put the length of these fault lines into perspective, here are the two fault lines shown on a map of Florida, a map of the UK, a map of Taiwan, Malaysia, Sri Lanka, South Korea, and Portugal. So you can see that the scale of this is absolutely enormous, and that's why there's been so much loss of life and so much devastation. Now, these fault lines are obviously not a new development. Turkey is fully aware that there is a potential risk of an earthquake in this area. So you may be asking the question, why did so many people live so close to the fault line? And this graph shows the number of people living in close proximity to the rupture line. The dotted line that's running down the middle of this graph represents the rupture line. The scale along the bottom is measured in kilometres, and the scale on the left-hand side shows the number of people living within that area, measured in tens of thousands. So what this shows is that there were hundreds of thousands of people living in very close proximity to the rupture line. So you may be asking the question, why on earth were all of these people living in buildings that were built along the earthquake zone? And the answer to that question is really down to geography and reasons for human settlement. The fault line actually runs at the foot of a number of mountains, and that's a more attractive area for humans to settle. It also runs along the edge of the most fertile land in the area, and obviously that's attractive to humans in terms of growing food. It's also close to the sources of water in the area, which again, when humans are settling in an area, is an attractive feature. And in terms of the man-made attractions, roads have actually been built directly on the fault line, as a result partially of the fact that this is the low-level ground at the base of the mountains. So all of these features combined attracted a lot of people to move to the area, and that's why so many people have been killed and injured as a result of these quakes. So as we discussed earlier, Turkey are fully aware where the earthquake zones are within the country. And there is legislation in place that should ensure that all property developers build their properties so that they are compliant with the rules and regulations for building in earthquake zones. So this means that the building should be constructed with additional features that would enable them to survive an earthquake. Now, there are lots of different methods and techniques that can be used to strengthen a building to make sure that it's not going to collapse as soon as there's any sign of a shake. And this diagram provides some examples of what can be incorporated into the structure. So you can see at the very bottom that the foundations have to be sunk deep into the bedrock and avoid any clay or any soft ground that could move in the event of an earthquake. In addition, some form of shock absorber can be incorporated into the foundation itself. And then in terms of construction of the actual building, one of the key elements is to avoid what's called a pancake collapse, where all of the stories collapse down onto themselves and mean that there's very little chance of survival because anybody who's in the building will be crushed by all of the debris. And as you can see in this diagram, it's suggested that a birdcage interlocking steel frame is used, which would prevent this building from just collapsing flat. But you can also use other techniques, including individual steel columns and frames. Now, unfortunately, it looks like a lot of the buildings that have been constructed near to the earthquake zone were not constructed using these sort of techniques. And it's been reported that 84,700 buildings have collapsed entirely as a result of these earthquakes. Now, one of the highest profile buildings that's collapsed is the Ronin's Residence, which translates as Renaissance Residence. And this was one of the most exclusive developments built in the centre of Antakya. It was a 12-storey block covering 10,500 square metres. It had 249 apartments, each of which had between 2 and 5 bedrooms each. It hosted a swimming pool, sports courts, a receptionist, and an estimated 1,000 people lived there, including a current professional footballer called Christian Atsu, who played previously for Newcastle United and Chelsea in the Premier League in England. Unfortunately, it appears that this building was not constructed using the safety techniques required for earthquake zones, and the entire building collapsed entirely, and unfortunately Christian Atsu is one of the many people who've been found dead at this property. Now, Turkey has vowed to probe the collapse of all buildings and is investigating 246 suspects so far, including developers, 27 of whom are now in police detention. Turkey's justice minister stated that no rubble is cleared without collecting evidence, and everyone who's had responsibility in constructing, inspecting, and using the building is being evaluated. Sector officials in Turkey have said that up to 50% of the total 20 million buildings in Turkey contravene building codes. In 2018, the government introduced a so-called zoning amnesty to legalise unregistered construction work, which engineers and architects warned could endanger lives. Some 10 million people applied to benefit from the amnesty, and 1.8 million applications were accepted. Property owners paid to register the buildings, which were then subject to various taxes and levies. Now, in addition to announcing an investigation in terms of all of the previous construction, President Erdogan has announced the construction of 200,000 new apartments will take place immediately. It's been estimated that the rebuild cost for all of the apartments and buildings that have collapsed and all of the infrastructure that needs to be replaced is around $100 billion. The World Bank recently announced an aid package of $1.8 billion that will be given to Turkey. And in addition to this, virtually every country in the world has come out and said that it will provide provide support. The USA has confirmed that they will provide $185 million, and the total aid being provided will stretch into the billions, and obviously this will have an impact on the global economy. Now, if you follow the channel, you'll be aware that Finland and Sweden made an application to join NATO in the summer of 2022. As a direct result of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, security concerns were raised in both countries, particularly in Finland, which shares an 800-mile-long border with Russia. And the way that the system works is that all 30 members of NATO have to vote unanimously. So every single one has to sign off on this for approval. And unfortunately, Turkey came out and stated that they were objecting against both of these applications as a result of both countries harboring and supporting terrorists that were wanted by Turkey. Now, progress was made at the end of 2022, following numerous conversations between all three parties. And Finland and Sweden agreed to hand over a variety of individuals that Turkey requested. However, unfortunately, in recent months, there's been a number of anti-Turkish protests in Sweden. And during one of these, a copy of the Quran was burned. And as a result, Turkey have stated that they're not prepared to support either application. And specifically, they are not happy with the Swedish proposal to join NATO. Now, in order to try to bring a speedy resolution to this matter, the US Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, has flown to Turkey and has met directly with his Turkish counterpart. In response to Turkey's statement that both Sweden and Finland need to show more concrete action, Antony Blinken said Finland and Sweden have already taken concrete steps to fulfil the commitments that they met under the trilateral memorandum of agreement that they've signed with Turkey, reiterating that NATO's Nordic expansion issue is not a bilateral one with Turkey. Blinken said the United States strongly supported Sweden and Finland's accession into the alliance as quickly as possible. But in response, the Turkish foreign minister said all parties in the alliance must convince Sweden in particular to take more action to address Turkey's concerns and win its support for the bid. When asked if Turkey would approve the accession by a NATO summit set to take place in Lithuania in July, a gathering by which Western countries are hoping the expansion can be completed, the minister stated that Sweden needed to do more. Sweden made a law change, but we see that every kind of activities, including terrorism financing, recruitment and propaganda, are continuing in Sweden, he said. If they take steps to convince our parliament and people, there could be a development in this direction. However, he did go on to say that the suspended talks with Sweden and Finland would resume soon in Brussels in a clear signal of easing tensions between Stockholm and Turkey. In response to this, the Swedish Prime Minister, Ulf Kristersson, said, "I, of course, welcome Turkey's announcement that they want to resume the discussions regarding the trilateral agreements that Sweden has with Turkey and Finland." He said a date had not yet been set for the resumption of the talks with Turkey, but told reporters he was convinced that Sweden would be joining NATO soon. So as it stands at the moment, there is still deadlock in terms of the proposal for these two countries to join the NATO alliance, but hopefully some form of resolution will be put into place soon, and potentially that meeting in Lithuania in July could be the pivotal date. So whilst we're talking Turkey, let's have a look at some of the key indicators from the Turkish economy. One of the challenges facing Turkey is that it is a net importer. It's having to import large quantities of energy products, which are expensive and are causing major problems with regards to a lack of currency. And this chart shows the volume of exports from Turkey over the last 12 months. And you can see that the monthly profile has been quite erratic. And in January, the total exports were down to $19.4 billion, which was the third lowest month in the last year. And this chart, which shows the monthly cost of the imports for Turkey over the last 12 months, highlights the problem. And as you can see, in January, the total cost of all of the imports was $33.7 billion, compared to the $19.4 billion of exports. And if we now jump onto the balance of trade, which looks at the difference between the revenue that Turkey is earning from its exports and the cost of all of its imports, you can see that in every one of the last 12 months, Turkey has been running a negative balance of trade. So that means that it's spending more on its imports than it's receiving for its exports. And the reason that this is a problem is that Turkey is having to fund the difference from its reserves, and its reserves are now dangerously low. And this chart shows the current account for Turkey, which is essentially the bank balance of the country. And you can see that in every one of the last 12 months, Turkey has been running a negative position. And if we now move on to inflation, which is one of the biggest problems facing the Turkish economy, you can see that prices have been rising rapidly in every single one of the last 12 months. There has been a positive trend over the last couple of months, and inflation has come down from a record high of around 85% to the current level of around 58%. But clearly, 58% is still an extremely high rate of inflation. This is one of the highest rates in the whole world right now. And wages are not rising at anything like 58% in Turkey, and that's causing major problems for the people in Turkey because prices are rising faster than the money in their pocket. And if we now move on to food inflation, which is a really important metric because it impacts on every single person in society, but disproportionately affects the poorest people because they're spending a bigger percentage of their income on food, you can see that food inflation is running at levels above the general rate of inflation and over the course of the last 12 months has been consistently above 64%. Now, it has come down from a high in November of 103% to the current level of 71%, but 71% is off the scale and is completely unsustainable for the vast majority of people in Turkey. And this chart shows the movement in the Turkish lira over the last 12 months. And you can see that this time last year, one US dollar was trading for around 13.8 Turkish lira. Today, the exchange rate is closer to 19 lira. And the devaluation of the lira is causing major issues because a lot of the items that Turkey is buying in, such as oil and gas and wheat, are priced in US dollars. And so as the value of the Turkish lira falls, the cost of all of these imported goods becomes relatively more expensive for all of the citizens in Turkey who are having to pay in Turkish lira. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video really to give you an update on what's happening in Turkey. We've been following the progress of the country closely over the last 12 months or so. And most of the videos that I've posted have been focused on the economy, what's happening with regards to policy decisions, interest rates, inflation. But today what we're talking about is something that is completely outside of anybody's control. Nobody can control what happens with regards to earthquakes. But as we talked about earlier in the video, there are ways of minimizing the impact of earthquakes. And these rules and regulations have been brought in Turkey. But unfortunately, it now looks like a lot of the buildings that were constructed in these earthquake zones were not compliant with all of those rules and regulations. And we've seen tens of thousands of buildings collapse. And it's reported that over 385,000 apartments have been destroyed as a result of the quakes. Now, it's estimated that the rebuild cost to put all of this accommodation back into place and to rebuild all the infrastructure is over $100 billion. And it's also been estimated that the direct impact of these disasters will knock between 1% and 2% off the total GDP for Turkey for 2023. So this is a really big economic blow for Turkey at a time when it can least afford it. As you'll know if you've been following the channel, Turkey has been struggling to be able to find enough cash to pay for all of its imports. It was badly affected by the increase in all of the commodity prices as a result of Russia invading Ukraine, and it hasn't really recovered from that position. And the cost and the damage of these earthquakes is only likely to make things harder in Turkey over the course of the next 3 to 6 months. And as we've just looked at from all of the economic indicators, Turkey is still spending more on its imports than it's earning from its exports. So it's going to need to find cash from somewhere else to keep funding all of those purchases. Now, over the course of the last 6 months or so, Turkey has struck a number of currency swap deals with countries from the Middle East and China, and it's likely that more of those deals will be put into place. And it's also likely that Turkey will extend its trading relationship with Russia, which is in a position to be able to supply a lot of the urgent commodities that Turkey needs. But the bottom line in all of these measures is that Turkey is taking on more and more debt, and at some point it's going to have to find a way of repaying that debt. And the big question is, how are they going to do that? So from an economic point of view, these earthquakes couldn't have come at a worse time for Turkey. Now, in terms of the application from Sweden and Finland to join NATO, Turkey is still sticking to its guns. It's refusing to sign off on those applications, and because the system requires unanimous approval, that means that neither country can gain access to the alliance. Now, Turkey has said that it's considering more talks, and it possibly will sign off, maybe on Finland's application. Sweden is still in the balance, but at some point over the course of the next 3 to 6 months, I think it is likely that Turkey will get around the table with both of those countries and thrash out a deal, and I expect that both countries will join NATO at some point during 2023. However, the potential fly in the ointment over all of this is that there is an upcoming election in Turkey. In May or June, President Erdogan will be going up for election for his third consecutive term. And I think it's highly likely that any decision with regards to the NATO application will be put off until after that vote is concluded. So as always, I'll keep you posted on any further news and developments on Turkey as soon as I hear them. If you've liked what I've said today, if you thought it was interesting and thought-provoking, please give me a thumbs up. And thanks for watching this video all the way through to the end.